It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We're in our brand new studios here on the East Side. Things are still a little bit rocky, but we've got the big three with us. Alex Lindsay, Andy Iannocco, Rene Ritchie. They'll join us to talk about the rumors still swirling about next Apple announcement coming up just in a couple.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 521, recorded Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Airbnb at Tim's house. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/MacBreak. and entering the promo code MacBreak. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. The day is fast approaching, and here's how I know. Rene Ritchie said, "If I were to be in studio on September 6th, would you all be there?" Rene Ritchie here from not the Pixel Core.
Nope.
We'll fix that. Push a button.
I'm honored,
push a button.
Though. I am super
push
honored.
A button. It's Rene Ritchie. He is from iMore.com. And do you know anything I don't know, or is it just by chance?
No, you know, I just assume it's going to be one of the first 2 weeks in September. It's almost always been that way for the last, since the iPhone, iPhone 5? They've been doing it then, so.
Yeah.
And if they do it that week because of Labor Day, it's probably going to be a Wednesday instead of a Tuesday because they'll need a day to set up. So I figured it'll either be the Wednesday and I can just go straight to the studio on the Tuesday, or if it's next week, we'll figure something out.
Well, we will have room for you right at this very table, this brand new table that we've purchased for our brand new studio. Also here, it's Alex Lindsay. We have his lower third ready. He is from the pixelcore.com. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
You were up here on Sunday, our first show from the new studio.
I was. It was fantastic. I was pretty amazed that you were able to make that flip so quickly. I know that a lot of get a lot of sleep, but it
I
was
don't
amazing.
Take any credit at all. It really is an amazing team that did that, and I'll tell you about that.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah. And Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times joining us. Andrew, would you like to come out for the September event, if there should be one?
I don't know yet. I might actually have other business happening that week, so I'm kind of holding off for now. But yeah, I would enjoy San Francisco in early September.
Yeah.
This is where people propose to each other. Yes,
It's the best time of year. I think that now that Apple streams it, in some ways, it's a better. Well, I tell you what, I like having people in the show. Like Rene will probably be in the event, because there is stuff you see, as you mentioned this, Andy, looking backstage and watching Tim Cook and seeing whether he's watching the video with delight or what he's thinking about. That's kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff you don't get unless you're on premises. But at the same time, because of the stream, we can see everything that's being announced. And it's kind of fun to sit here and kibitz from afar. So, you know, I don't know. We get the best of both worlds. We'll do both, I'm sure. I think September 6th, that makes sense. In fact, didn't we see now a leaked AT&T in a house memo for staff talking about store staffing?
I think the 7th, probably because of Labor Day. I think that pushes them by a day.
Yeah, they'll do it on Wednesday.
It would normally be the 6th, but they'd push it a day.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then AT&T's little blurb thing said the 9th, we have to staff up on the 9th, and then staff up again on the 23rd. Those are both Fridays, and that makes sense because if Apple follows suit, they have the event, and they say pre-ordering begins at midnight on Friday, the 9th. So AT&T would want to have lots of people in their phone stores that day. and delivery on the 23rd, 2 weeks later, which also makes sense.
Yeah, last year it was 2 weeks later. The week before, the previous years it was 10 days later, but then last year they went into whatever it was, 17 days later, because it better suited their schedule and they could easily stay that way.
It doesn't, I mean, obviously it's Apple can do whatever they want, right? I mean, it doesn't, but.
Well, they want to get them there in time for the holiday. That's so everyone can order from September through the holidays. Right.
So I think it seems fairly reasonable that 2 weeks from tomorrow, we will have a new phone. And is there any reason to doubt any of the rumors that we have been repeating ad nauseum for the last month? It's all that, right? If you don't know what the new iPhone, the latest thing is it won't be called a Pro. It'll be called the 7 and 7 Plus.
Really?
No, it's all made up, I think. I don't know who to trust. I trust you, Renee. You know.
They can call it anything. So like, that's a marketing decision. At some point, like, it's got an internal code name. It's almost always a number with two letters and then, or three letters sometimes. And then at some point, marketing makes a decision. They type it in and everyone goes, makes boxes and
well, that's the thing. The boxes are made, right?
Yeah. Fact, so they can call it, yeah.
The phones are on the boat, right? There's containers of the phones on their way, I would think.
They're making millions, and they could call it anything they want. They could call it iPhone X this year if they want. It's
matter.
A completely marketing decision. It has no bearing on reality.
Yeah. And really no bearing on anything to worry about.
No, like Galaxy Note went from 5 to 7. You know why? Marketing. I mean, like you could call it anything you want. Windows 10. It's all fun.
Yeah. I only bring it up because if we don't talk about it, we really don't have much to say.
No, I think it's going to be super interesting. I mean, this is a phone where we've seen, like, the same thing with Intel, where they went from TikTok to TikTok. Talk and maybe TikTok, depending on what happens, because it's not always easy to make generational leaps. And sometimes there's a lot of value in keeping the basics of what you have and improving the things that are ready. So if they don't have a fancy dancy new design, I'd rather they not artificially make one. Like, oh my God, we're making a triangular iPhone this year just because, but they can make a much better camera. You know, I don't want to have to care about the iPhone camera. I just want to be able to take great pictures in a bar with, you know, I'm hanging out with Andy and Alex and you, and I want to take a photo, and it just, the low light is there, and I shouldn't have to worry about that. It should be a great photo regardless, and that's the kind of problems that they can solve this year.
Will it be worth running out and getting a new one? I mean, we'll all have to just because it's our job, but
blue, Leo. I mean, just like gold and rose gold. We only care that there's a new color. That'll show we have the new one.
Blue. Will it be blue? Yeah. Will there be blue?
I think for most people, I think the average person doesn't need to upgrade more.
They
than
upgrade every other year, don't they? Really? Yeah. That's the truth of it.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that it's not really, does it compare to the 6 or 6, you know, as it's, or 6 Plus or whatever they, you know, whatever they have there is really, does it compare to the 5, you know, or the, you know, I think that's really the.
Right.
Does it jump enough from that position is really the sell point. And how many people are still on 5s? My wife's still on a 5. I complain about it.
5, it's time.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm sorry. Alex, you were about to say something.
No, he was about to groan.
I was, yeah.
You I mean, stepped on his groan.
it's quite remarkable the difference between like real people and mutants like us. the number of times that I see the only group of people that I see routinely always have the nicest, newest phone are kids, like teenagers and like really, really young adults. And everybody who has a car payment that they're now either a car mortgage, the car note that they're halfway through, or God forbid a mortgage. These are the people that are carrying phones with broken screens and aluminum bands around the edges of them. And I can't imagine what it takes to convince someone who is perfectly content with an iPhone 5 to say that no, this is the time you take your phone that's completely paid off and for whatever you use that phone for is working just great, and please find $700 or $600 to spend on a brand new phone. The Touch ID is amazing. The new screens are amazing. The cameras are two leaps ahead of whatever the iPhone 5 had, but it takes a while to get someone into a store and to get someone to want it. Now, they don't want it. Their phone is just a functional item for these people.
Well, and I think that's why Apple spends so much money on the camera, is because the number one complaint I have is my wife will send me pictures of my kids that she went some cool place with them while I was traveling, and took this great picture of the beach, and it's on an iPhone 5, and the, you know, it's just not nearly the same quality that it could be. I'm like, you need to get a new phone. So anyway, I think that that's obviously why Apple has 200 engineers working on the camera.
And it's still the best. I will say that the iPhone still has hands down the best camera of any phone I've ever seen or I've seen to this point. I haven't had a lot of hands on with the Note 7 yet, but I don't think that it will have the feature. The Note 7 will have the feature that is makes iPhone cameras so great, which is there is a button and you push it. And in that instant, it takes a picture. Which is something that Android phones often kind of screw up depending on what's going on behind the scenes, where maybe the camera takes a second too long to launch, or you tap it and you don't see it immediately do anything and you're not sure if it's taking a picture, so you lower it to take a look at it, and that's when the shutter opens, so now you have a blurry picture of your knee. As great as I've taken some amazing photos with some of the Android cameras that I've had on loan, but when that's why you gotta just keep shooting with these things, because it's not good enough to say I spent a good 30 seconds at this spot with that that's very, very picturesque, and here is the best of the five pictures that I took. It really is, I raised a camera, I pressed a button, I got a picture, I went on with my life, and no other phone is as good or reliable at that as the iPhone is.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm super interested to see what they do with the camera, because there's always rumors that they're going to have a dual lens system, but it's what they do with that dual lens system. And some manufacturers have put a secondary wide angle lens on there or played with the aperture. And sometimes when you don't add, like that's why lenses are so deep. When you don't add Z index, you get a lot of aberration in some of the pictures. So how do you solve for that? Or are they going to put a black and white lens there to help with low light? Because you can pull in a bunch of black and white data and use that on the ultimate picture. It gets processed on the image signal processor and it makes a much better low light picture. Or maybe they could do something with depth of field. If the lenses are far enough apart, they can start pulling some distance information from it and start optimizing or working on depth of field, all sorts of different things. Which of those are they going to pick? And then how is it going to be implemented? So to Andy's point, I don't want to sit there for 5 minutes futzing with a dual lens camera to try to decide what I want. I want to press that button and have that whole camera assembly figure out how to give me a great photo and then just give it to me. And that's usually where, you know, Apple does their magic.
Yeah, Apple does some incredible things, particularly with the camera, because every time you take a look at the specs of the CPU that's in this iPhone, you have to say to yourself, this is way, way too powerful for the apps that this device is running. But the reason why it's that powerful is that it's feeding all kinds of features that you would normally get by adding new hardware, or in the case of the camera, putting in a bigger image sensor, or adding greater exposure latitude. I was just thinking that rather than put in a second wide angle lens, Apple's photo team has so much mojo and so much skill. They could do something like just put in a semi fisheye lens there. I mean, a fixed semi fisheye lens. And when you don't tap the button for the special super wide angle mode, it's just simply correcting all of the spherical aberrations live and behind the scenes without you ever being aware of it. There's so much that it seems like every year I get about another 3% of an understanding of by meeting the right person and the right person talking to me, even though they're not necessarily supposed to, about what the iPhone camera is doing that I was never aware of. And it always looks like chapter 7 out of any Photoshop book I owned 4 years ago. It's like, really? It's just doing that automatically just in case the sun goes behind that cloud? Oh, okay. That's clever.
Increasingly. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the really exciting thing this year is from WWDC, we saw that they've introduced RAW. So RAW is not an Apple thing, but they're going to make it available to third parties the way that they did with the manual photo controls 2 years ago. And they also have a pipeline now that's wide gamut. So we've seen that in the iMac and the 9.7-inch iPad, where they can do DCI P3 color space. But they also support 2020 color space, which is the next one after that. And when you start to be able to capture in wide gamut and you be able to display in wide gamut, that to me is super exciting, because we've seen that in higher end equipment, but we've never seen that in a little pocket camera, especially when Apple is doing all that with the processor in between.
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly button that up, I mean, I have to say that I've been using Adobe Lightroom added a really good capture feature to Lightroom for Android, and that includes the ability to capture as a DNG, as a digital negative, as a raw file, and just the ability to capture as I don't care that the image that's presenting me on the screen after I tap the shutter button is the best image, the image exactly as I wanted it to be. What I care is that it's collecting enough data that 5 minutes or 5 days later, I can turn it into the photo that I want it to be. I mean, I took some pictures of sunsets, and the ability to have manual controls to say, don't try to guess at what this exposure is. I'm telling you, I want you to go lower, lower, lower. And then to be able to take that blown out part of it and restore clouds and texture to it because it just captured the widespread of data. That's pretty phenomenal. And it also is a way for Apple to stay ahead of competitors that might be saying, yes, we have our we're selling you a $280 phone. But the great thing is that you take a picture, it gets automatically sent back to our super powerful servers, which will process it and send back an image that's as good as what an iPhone would get. Maybe yes, maybe no. But it's all people care about is that final really good looking picture.
And I think that as the technology keeps on moving forward, I think we're going to see, you know, first we're going to make sure we're going to get a wider gamut. We're going to get, you know, it's going to catch up with film. Right now, the problem really is that we on a digital camera, are the target that we have to hit as a user to get a great image is still pretty small. What film gave us and what, you know, a lot of these wider gamut solutions give us is a bigger target. I can hit something pretty wide and still end up with something by the time I put it on the web. So I think that those wider gamuts, I think, are going to be one piece of that. I think we're going to start seeing with the two lenses eventually technologies that allow us to refocus, regain a lot of detail. We took that picture of our kids that is just, you know, that nose is in focus and the eyes are out of focus. Well, how do we fix that? You know, so I think that those are going to be, you know, things. I think also being able to go back in time. We already see this with regular cameras, not film cameras, but regular digital cameras where I take the photo, but it was actually taking photos for, you know, a couple seconds before and go back and find the right one. And so I think that those are all the competitive areas of cell phone cameras as they truly replace most of the digital cameras that we've been buying, unless you're getting something like an SLR or a Sony A7S or something like that.
Yeah, like, really a, like cool a time machine feature only for photos. Where you can say, oh, show me what my daughter looked like in the 5 seconds before she got hit in the face by that soccer ball.
I like that.
BlackBerry and Nokia had that for a while. I forget what it was called. They licensed it from Nokia. It was super cool. But the other thing that's really interesting is that Apple makes their own chipset. So for the last 2 years, they've been making an A10 chip that conceivably knows the entire software map. So when you look at, they already have a great image signal processor, but there's a lot of signal processing. On iOS 10, I can type steaks into the Photos app or coffee, and it shows me all those pictures. But it's sort of just burning CPU cycles to do that. But you have to imagine that they're going to build that in the same way they build the image, like the color correction and white balance correction in. So it's going to be optimized for – it's a big claim to say we're going to do artificial intelligence on device and machine learning on device when you're dealing with companies like Google or Facebook, and you have to back that up. And the way they can do that is with the massive advantage they have in silicon, and they will be processing those photos as you take them. And doing all sorts of AI and all sorts of machine learning that is completely optimized to run on that chip behind the scenes as you're capturing the photos and indexing them and coordinating them. And that, I think, differential privacy too can run right off the hardware. That kind of stuff, I think, is going to be super exciting going forward.
One of the things that is becoming more apparent is that Apple is doing stuff behind the scenes that nobody really is aware of. And Apple doesn't even really fully express. You mentioned the camera thing, Andy, but we're also seeing, I thought this was an interesting article, and I don't know what to think of it, from Mac Rumors yesterday, in which they did a kind of a weird benchmark, but a benchmark between the brand new Galaxy Note 7 and last year's 6S. The Note 7 is a Snapdragon 820, 4 gigs of RAM. The 6S has the A9 processor, which will be superseded in a month by the A10, and 2 gigs of RAM. And, you know, they didn't do the kind of the traditional benchmark test. Here, let me turn off their audio. They didn't do the traditional benchmark test where you might load browser pages, things like that. They just opened a lot of apps. They launched 14 apps, one after the other, as fast as they can. Let me skip to that part of it. And the iPhone was able to open. Now, this is synthetic as synthetic can be, because I guess nobody's going to do that. And yet it might be. Tell something about the speed of the disk access, about the speed of the operating system, the speed of the
processor. It's so different. I mean, Exactly. It's such different devices because you think it's when people say like this has more cores or this has more RAM, it's like comparing a Ferrari to a Mac truck.
Well, that's exactly right.
Different architecture.
So how you use it is what matters, right? How fast a web page renders or how fast apps
for things like how fast is Prisma process, like for things that are intensive, that's what matters to you, or how fast Photoshop. But this, again, this is taking a device that has a chip specifically designed for the software that runs on it and putting it up against, I'm assuming this is the Qualcomm version, not the Exynos version.
They said the 820, yeah.
Yeah, so that is a chip that is designed to run multiple cross-platform architectures, so it's carrying a burden that Apple does not have. Apple does not have to support DirectX, does not have to support anything that they do not want to support, and they can build every sort of optimization imaginable into that chip.
And it's also a 920p iPhone versus a 1440p.
Totally.
This is in apples and oranges, but it is the experience
that
users
are going to have. There's no interpretive language. There's no Java to deal with.
Right.
Not really. I mean,
no user's going to launch 14 apps in a row.
they're not going to, and no one cares about how fast can I launch apps. It's always about how fast can I switch from one app to another.
Right.
So the hardware isn't as important as whatever mojo is inside the OS to decide that, okay, this app is super, super, super idle right now, so we're just going to put in deep freeze. We know that this user is typically going to, he hasn't launched Evernote, but he is typical to dip into Evernote, so we're going to keep this sort of close to the front as much as possible. It really is like one of these, so we decided what happens if you were to freeze an iPhone 7 in carbonite and then shoot a missile at it. That's not going to happen.
I don't want to be in the lifestyle
where I have to worry about that.
I don't know.
The only place where it really matters is like day-to-day usage. So I launched a game that uses Unreal or that uses Unity, and then I had to switch to go answer an iMessage, and then I went back to my game, and if it has to reload again and I'm waiting those 10 seconds for this massive 3D game to load, then I go answer another message and I'm waiting for it again. If you can just bounce back and forth between those apps, and that's hugely valuable from a user perspective. And if all these phones can optimize to keep those apps available and to launch them fast when they do launch, then that is just, it's ultimately where we want all the platforms to be.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this article out.
I mean, no, it is what it is. It's like any benchmark is fine. You just have to present it in context.
What I think it shows, it's probably not that significant, but it does show that Apple is designing purpose-built software and hardware together. This is always Apple's secret sauce, right? Is if you want your software to sing, you design the hardware that it runs on, and vice versa. And that's
totally. And you could
done.
Put a 2K display in an iPhone. Like, they could easily, I mean, they exist. They have companies that sell them. They could put it in. But right now, for those iPhones, like, they probably have better, like, higher resolution iPhones in the future. But for those iPhones, they wanted speed and they wanted energy efficiency. Yeah. And that to them was more important than pixel count.
Probably they want OLED at this point. Go ahead, Andy.
With everything, there's such a balance. There's such a varying definition of what is the right choice and what's the wrong choice.
Right.
And that's as much a cultural question as an engineering question. You can't deny that I've had OLED phones with 4K displays. Whatever the terminology is for above 1080, whatever there's so much baloney that I keep slipping on the baloney, so I don't know what terms people are saying. But I've used phones that have much higher resolution displays than the iPhone. They're perfectly fine. They're perfectly snappy. Mm-hmm. They're perfectly zippy. And so it's not as though you can't do it. It's that whatever the design path the engineers at Apple are on, they don't feel as though whatever benefit they're going to get from ultra high resolution is going to be worth whatever they have to put themselves through and whatever they have to put through the consumer through in order to get there.
Yeah. And I think Apple has the advantage, obviously, of having the software and hardware, and then also being a huge group, even though Apple is not the majority of smartphone users, they are one of the single largest, like they're going to sell this many iPhones that are all exactly the same, which gives them, a lot of efficiency and scale and the ability to spend incredible amounts of money on technology that other ones can't. And then the fact that you have that all tied in where you're not hoping that you're going to get some kind of software upgrade or integration or anything else. You can just decide that 2 years, 3 years out exactly what that architecture is going to look like. I think that is still one of Apple's key advantages when it comes to doing that. I think they're pretty accurate at deciding what we think is important. I think we'll all argue about the headphone jack as it comes out. But I think I think OLED to the average user doesn't matter. I think that we think it's cool and it looks great, but I don't think people are going to make choices based on you know, they'll make choices on image stabilization, image stabilized phones, the cameras before they make it on the screen. I think, you know, I think that that output is more important.
Well,
OLED is super interesting just because currently 3D Touch is linked to the LED backlight, and OLED does not have an LED backlight. So there are phones with LED that are introducing things that are very similar to 3D Touch. So it's absolutely possible to architect around it. But Apple would have to architect around the current implementation to do it. And then you have to wonder if technologies like quantum dot are advanced enough that Apple might just skip OLED. You know, they used OLED for the watch, so they absolutely can do it and understand why, when and where it has a huge advantage to do it. But would they think, oh, let's just go to OLED now if quantum dot is next year or the year after? So it's like Andy said, there's so much to balance.
Well, I think Apple looks at ROI and cost and R&D and allowing, you know, making sure that what they think is going to make the difference in, make a difference in what people are actually going to choose to buy. I think that there's a lot of that rather than trying to make it the coolest thing every single time.
I think they like making things that are cool.
I think they do, but I think that there's definitely an ROI.
Do you feel like there's a fork in the road a little bit where, I guess this has always been the case, but it feels to me more like Apple is counting more and more on lock-in to its products and worrying less and less. They never worried much about the competition, but it feels like now they're almost going their own way. Like, they aren't even really looking at what other, like, OLED screens. Well,
that's always been
that way, haven't they? It just feels more that way.
And I wouldn't necessarily call it lock in. There are some ways in which, boy, unless you want to rebuy a whole thing.
Jack, I hate to bring this up again, but there's an example, right, of Apple saying, you know, we're in our own world at this point.
Well, that's also always been true. Yeah. With the headphone thing, we're not going to go the full 14 rounds on that again. But the thing is that the world won't end when Apple releases phones that don't have headphone jacks. I will continue to say that I think that's a very not anti-consumer, but at least a counter-consumer positive thing. But if people tend to keep their original headphones and wear them forever, they're not going to care. I think that there is part of what gives Apple a certain amount of freedom, and I'll spin that in a positive way, is that they know that they are the only people that are going to be selling phones that that run iOS and run iOS apps. So therefore, if they want to make a change that they feel is important, either for the future of the platform or for the happiness and safety of their users or just for their own bottom lines, they don't have to worry about what happens when they're two nearly identical phones and the competitor's phone costs $75 less and has a damn headphone jack and runs the same apps. They don't have to worry about that. They can simply say, you know what, the phone we want to make a year from now will work so much better if we don't have to make room for a headphone jack internally. So therefore, it won't have any effect on this year's model, but at least it will get us out of the way so that we can start the transition in towards the iPhone 10,
iPhone 8, the 10th anniversary. I'm also interested to see if they're going to take advantage of, you know, leveraging their new purchase or newer purchase, you know, and looking at this, you know, of headphones. One thing I've been playing around with a lot of Bluetooth headphones because I haven't really done that, and now I'm thinking, oh, maybe I should think about it. So I was, you know, been trying lots of them, and you really get that there is this. If you got it right, there's a headphone that you'd want to put in that you can hear the rest of the world. But it's just kind of there all the time. You can answer questions and do stuff. Now, it might give you cancer, you know, kill you later. But there is this, I definitely, you know, I think I, that was kind of almost felt like a holy grail when I was, you know, for a long time where I can answer questions. I mean, I can answer the phone. I can listen to my music. I can hear people around me. And the thing is the question is, as you look at where Apple's going, you almost feel like they could make an argument if they did it when they released this, if they had this cutting edge, you know, hearing device, I think it could be an interesting, I mean, it could be used as a hearing aid. It could be used as a lot of different things. And I don't know if this is actually going to happen, but I started thinking that could be one possible way to do it. And the question really is will Apple, and this is a more kind of odd, dangerous question. Will Apple continue to use Bluetooth to do it? Because Bluetooth is what everybody's using and it's very effective. Apple doesn't have to necessarily play by that rule. And there's when you deal with transmission of audio for hearing aids, for instance, or for in-studio headset, we have a couple of them that are We have transmitters. You know, they look like the Jack Bauer ones you put in, and these wireless Phonak receivers.
I want those. Can I have those? I want those. Where do you get those?
Phonak makes them. They actually have a whole.
They make hearing aids too.
They make hearing aids, and then they have a whole division that's based on. Yeah, they have a whole division that's based on broadcast and a whole other division that's based on defense and intelligence and all kinds of other stuff. And so they, you know, that to use those. And so, but those transmissions are not using, interestingly enough, they can be set to take the same transmission as a comtex, which is what they, you know, that's like listening devices that it was originally designed for churches, but we use them on studios all the time. So those frequencies in that transmission is definitely not Bluetooth, and it's definitely higher quality. And so the question is whether Apple not only maybe keeps Bluetooth, it's not like you can't use them, but I don't think they would turn that off, but they may say, hey, we're going to do this whole other platform that is much higher resolution, longer distance, higher wide fidelity band than Bluetooth. Yeah, you know, like all it, we're going to add all these things to it. To make it truly a great wireless experience, because the real problem with Bluetooth is that, you know, it doesn't go through your body very well. So if you put your phone on one side of you and you put the ears on the ears up here, it doesn't get through water very well. And so there's a whole bunch of things that Apple could improve on in that wireless transmission that could make a very valid argument of why would you ever want to have wires again. There's a lot of reasons. The more I test the Bluetooth, that you still breaks up. It's cool. But it still breaks up enough that, you know, it's not a good replacement for wired. But it could be if you didn't use Bluetooth.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't want to get the headphone thing again. We'll find out, and we can all chew on that in just a couple of weeks. I do think, it's somewhat related to that, that a lot of people might opt to wait for the big talk, right? The 10th anniversary iPhone next year.
This I wouldn't be surprised if Apple's betting
wait
on
3 years.
It.
They're betting on it. How would they bet on it?
Well, you put out the headphone jack and get rid of that argument. You figure it out, make it work, or whatever. There's a higher percentage. I think I saw somewhere where there's a stat where there's just this huge number percentage. If you look at people's buying mentality, they are more likely to buy next year than this year anyway. And so you kind of build up that process. You get the hard conversation out of the way, which is that we're going to take out a component that you're used to, and then make sure that the next conversation is there. And you bet on the fact that you've got enough lock-in and people aren't going to change, that you're not going to really lose much market share until the next one just has to knock it out of the park. And
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a calculation.
I don't know how much people are really aware that next year is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, and that it would affect their desire.
Oh, really?
To,
oh, interesting. Yeah.
It's second nature to us. I'm just not sure how aware the real world is about that, unless you know the press decides to make this into a huge, huge, huge issue and make people aware that try to scare people away from buying the phone they're planning on buying this year, not based on the features it has, not based on whether it's a good value, but there's a 10 is larger than 9 and it has a 0 at the end of it, and we all know how we humans love numbers that have zeros at the end of it, and yeah. Maybe they're going to have one with a C with a micro CD slot, so you don't have to even rip your albums anymore. You can just I don't know.
I like that.
Well, the other interesting thing is like again
the invent that. That's good.
I'll say is that I'm not sure that they would that Tim Cook would like to be on the on that analyst call on some quarter next year and say, "Yep, I know that sales of the iPhone 7 are pretty much dismal, but we intentionally decided to lower expectations for this one for the big phone we're making this year." No, I think he wants to say it was our best-selling iPhone yet and our best iPhone yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the other way around too. It's like just by calling an iPhone, like this year is actually the 10th iPhone. So if they'd wanted to, they could go up on stage and say, "We're releasing the 10th iPhone model, and what a momentous occasion this is!" And we made a big deal out of it, and there's this all new design. But if that design is not ready, it's not ready. If the technology that needs to go into it isn't ready, it isn't ready. And we saw this with MacBooks and Apple TV and a whole bunch of things. Is sometimes technology just takes a while to get here. So if they can't do a major redesign this year, the way they've done every 2 years up until now, it's a great excuse to say next year that, you know, there's this great new phone and we waited for the 10th anniversary. That's great marketing, but I think the reality is Apple will always push out this stuff just as fast as they can. And if there's a reason they can't do it, then that's when you sort of get the marketing on top of it.
I think Apple has probably a fairly good idea of they're pretty good at their projections. I think they know how many people will probably upgrade no matter what. there's a certain level of people that have iPhone 4s and iPhone 5s.
It's just timing.
And iPhone 6s, there's a pattern to it, and they're going to, get the newer phone. And the reality is you hang on to your phone as long as, if you're a regular person, you hang on to the phone as long as you can, and then upgrade, And my basic rule is once I'm within, for the company at least, once we're within 2 months of September, I won't buy a phone. Anytime before that,
right?
Anytime before that, it's just
when
like,
you need
buy
it,
the phone.
As
you buy the phone as needed. But but once you get within 2 months, you're like, if you can wait another 2 months, then we can. And we made that decision. We've got a bunch of iPhone 4s, I think, that we had issued a long time ago that are dead, and the producers are complaining. And so we're and I was going to get them over the summer, and it was like July, and I was like, I'm just going to wait until September.
I just read an article. I wish I could find it, but this morning I read an article. Well, 4 a.m. as usual, on my phone. In bed, hovering over it so the light wouldn't bother anybody. about battery life and how we're really being advised not to do the right thing for our battery life, especially with these fast chargers. But most people don't care because shortening the battery life doesn't make much difference when your phone is a two year and out device. Yep. So that's why all these Apple doesn't really have a quick charge solution, but the new Quick Charge 2 and Quick Charge 3, which charges really fast, shortens the life significantly of your battery.
Yeah. I mean, they weighed those options. The best they'll do for you right now is you plug it into an iPad charger and it'll charge faster.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You could make the case that other manufacturers are kind of pushing you to getting rid of your phone in 2 years. Apple isn't. Do you think Apple users keep their phones longer?
I think they have. There's a huge secondary market for iPhones, and it's a huge gray market because no one really keeps good numbers on it. But when you add together, that's why Apple and AT&T and everyone is getting into reselling. Like when you hand back the iPhone subscription plan, every year you get a new iPhone, but you hand back that phone. And I know in my family, there's like three generations of hand-me-down phones already in order of how old the person in the family is.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah.
And I have fives, and I think I have one of my family members has a 4S still that they're using, and it's not the primary owner. Like there's the early adopter who's always getting the latest and greatest, but those other phones have a long, especially the iPads. I think my mom was using an iPad 2 until this year, until it conked out and it was way beyond warranty, and we got her a Pro.
My kids were using the iPad 1 quite happily until the top half of the screen stopped working. That thing was much more of a tank, by the way, than all the newer ones.
It Interesting. Really yeah. That's a good one for kids, in other words.
Yes.
And they don't really care if they have the latest or greatest, as long as they can play. What is it they play now?
Pokemon.
Pokemon is dying, isn't it?
Minecraft. Yeah, I know, but it's dying. It's gone down from like 120 million to 60 million. So it's doomed the way Apple. Like it will go down, like but Apple. It's so high that it's...
Yeah. It's dying, but it's going to make somebody very, very rich in their will.
And apparently they're doing the Harry Potter version or something next. So
really?
That Ingress IP is going to last for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They could do all sorts of time.
Any good franchise they can get, yeah.
Because it's the same game.
And people like it. People just like going out and hunting things.
Interesting. Interesting.
Today it's Pokemon. Next year it's humans.
The world.
Let's take a tiny little break. We were talking Apple with three of the best people in the world to talk Apple with. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. And now we have your proper name associated with your picture. Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Who has not turned bright white in an entire half hour. That's amazing.
I've rarely been bright on this show, I think, as people will
have you been riding the bright white switch? Is that what's...
Hasn't tripped since last time I talked about it, but
yeah, that's good.
I'm sure we jinxed it.
I'm sorry. Whoops. And Alex Lindsay, he is from the Pixel Core, and you could follow him. If you want to keep up on what he's doing, best thing to do, follow him on the Twitter.
I'm doing it.
You're doing it?
I'm doing a lot of traveling, so there'll be fun tweets starting later this
week. Awesome. Fun tweets coming. Where are you going?
Places. You'll have to follow the Twitter. I probably won't even tell you where some of them are. They'll just be pictures. And then they're there.
And then you'll know. At AlexLindsay. Show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. From Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with fast, easy, and completely online process because they know you're a geek and that you would prefer to do this on the web rather than carrying in a big old box of papers to some guy sitting behind a desk with a green eye shade going, and a quill pen going, let me see your paperwork. Rocket Mortgage is fast, it's powerful, it's completely online. They've taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. You don't have to search through stacks of old files and paperwork. You don't have to schlep boxes of stuff to your mortgage broker. You don't even have to leave the house. In fact, you don't even have to get up off the couch. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution tailored to your unique financial situation. Because computers. Computers, is there anything they can't do? And you can do it on your phone if you want, on your tablet. You can do it in your jammies. Here's how you do it. Go to quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Whether you're looking to refi or buy a new home or pre-qualify for a new home, quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Yes, Rocket Mortgage is from Quicken Loans. That should give you a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling because they're the best. They are the best. Rocket Mortgage. Quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support of MacBreak Weekly. What else is going on in the world of Apple? When are we getting our new MacBooks?
Probably not this month. Womp.
Not new MacBooks.
Maybe not this month, but I don't know.
We won't get new MacBooks. We'll get new MacBook Pros, right? We'll probably have the same old MacBooks. We just got new MacBooks this spring. What? What are you laughing at? I remember it was a year ago today, roughly. No, a year ago in a couple of weeks, that we were in London. And we went to, or maybe it was 2 years ago. Gosh, time flies. And we went to the Apple Music Festival. It kicks off once again, September 18th. Is it at the Roundhouse again? Because that is a great place to go see it.
I just look for Dalrymple, and then I figure it's somewhere behind him.
Pharrell last year and One Direction headlined. Last year they kind of rolled out the acts bit by bit. 10 exhilarating nights. And you can watch, of course, for free through iTunes, so you don't have to buy tickets. Tickets will go on sale. They're free, I think, if they do it the same way. If you're a resident of the UK, you can win for free, but you have to do some, you know, you have to get in the drawing or whatever it is.
Apple Music. Can you watch on iTunes or just Apple Music?
Oh, that's what's changed. You're right. Yeah. It was iTunes, wasn't it? Now it's just Apple Music members.
Well, they had a direct, they made an app that you could download to your Apple TV or other things, and you could watch it through that app. But I don't know if it's just folded into Apple Music now.
No, that's what the Apple announcement said. No, you nailed it. I stand corrected. Here's the teaser video. Apple Music Festival 10. Yeah, it's at the Roundhouse, 18th through the 30th. It was a whole month when we were there, but we went on the 30th and we saw Plaza do Domingo. We saw a great opera. London is such a great town to see music in, too. It really, you know, you're in the home of the Beatles and the Clash. And well, that was it. Okay. Not much to say there. No hints. Follow Apple Music on Twitter and Snapchat for up-to-the-minute music information. Hashtag AMF10, the 10th anniversary Apple Music Festival. You were at the the Fifth Avenue Apple Store last night, weren't you, Renee?
Yeah. It's a nice one. One of the things I noticed there that was pretty cool, and it reminds me about that whole headphone argument, is they had Beats headphones, and I don't know if it was an Olympic tie-in or not, but they had flags. Like they had the Canadian flag and the Brazilian flag that was artwork put onto the headphones, and it made me realize that with Beats, they really are doing that big fashion play like they did with the Apple Watch bands, because they have the rose gold and the gold, of course, but now they're doing all these special colors and short runs so that if you really want it, you've got to get it because you don't know how long it's going to be there. And that's an interesting move as technology becomes, you know, more mainstream and changes less. The cosmetic changes become more frequent.
Are you excited about Apple Watch 2?
Yes.
Yes!
I'm an optimist, though, Leo. I'm a huge tech enthusiast and an optimist, so I'm uncharacteristically happy about everything that comes out. I like the idea. Like, to me, it's very much like an iPhone 3G, where it's the same basic device, but they've just added something to it. In this case, a 3G radio, because there are a lot of people who love their Apple Watch, but they also wear a Garmin because they go outside and they run and they just really want GPS. And yes, GPS is a battery hit, but so is the heart rate monitor. People, especially with a 38 millimeter watch, know that if they do two workouts in a day, it's going to just kill their battery. And they'll know the same way that if they have two GPS sessions in a day, it's probably going to do some damage on their battery. Now, things like LTE and cellular, I mean, Apple's been prototyping those since before the Apple Watch came out. And the thing with the original Apple Watch is it's already running at the thermal limits of that casing. So adding anything like LTE would just burn your wrist off and or drain your battery immediately. And that's probably not going to change until, you know, the LTE chips get incredibly efficient or the casing becomes bigger like some other vendors who make LTE watches that are, you know, much bigger in size, like the GPS watches were. But I think even if you just add the GPS and you add the Apple S2 computer on a chip, combined with watchOS 3, and that's a pretty compelling device to me.
You know, I wonder if the world, this is another case where I wonder if the world will flock to an upgrade, or it'll be people who haven't bought it yet, maybe convinced because they're runners, they need the GPS, or I don't see people upgrading. Do you? I know you.
No,
will.
I don't. I think I'm interested more than the features. I'm interested to see how Apple introduces new watch hardware, because you remember that the rollout and both the first announcement and the actual shipping presentation, the announcement was kind of all over the place. I think that if Apple has learned anything over the past year and a half of sales, it's that people love it as a fashion item and they love it as a fitness device. Everything else is a big question mark. So I would be, it sounds like I'm trying to be snarky here, but if much of the presentation is here are wonderful new bands we've created, or here are new case colors we've created, and the rest of it is nothing but we're not going to show you how I got live video of my garage door opening because I was able to unlock it from Bali, and watch the door opening. I think they're going to basically say fitness, health. That especially when you're talking about the sort of devices that already cost $200, $250, and they're exceptional. But Apple is in a really good position to say, well, why don't you spend, if you're already in for $250 for one of these high-end Garmin watches, for $100 more, you could get something that is a really robust app platform that is as well-made, if not better made, and you won't be self-conscious about wearing this to a family wedding as you might with your fitness band. I don't think the consumers have said much about their interest in having a computer on your wrist that runs apps beyond its ability to simply push notifications to your wrist, but they have overwhelmingly said that we love fitness devices. So if Apple were to simply not even change anything about the apps, anything about the design, anything about the operating system, and just simply start talking about it primarily as something for tracking health and fitness and making you enjoy the fun things that you do even more because you're able to be more aware of how your body's reacting to your motion, I think that could be the biggest step forward Apple's made for the watch in the past year and a half.
Which is funny because those are like not even primary things for me. For me, the notifications to my watch are the only reason that I don't go back to an old one. You know, like it's
and,
you know,
and lot, but lots of ones do that. I got an $80 thing that does that as well as an Apple Watch.
Right, except that I don't know. It's just easier to integrate with my phone. Right. It's that becomes the ecosystem issue. I turn it on and it just does the thing. I don't have to figure it out and it works. You know, and it looks nice enough.
And the thing to remember is that there's almost Apple does not expect people to upgrade year over year. It's the same way with the iPhone 3G. It was not expected to get original iPhone owners, especially because they spent a lot of money on the original iPhone, but there were a lot of people who never bought one. And both with the Apple Watch 2 and with the rumored Apple Watch original that's getting a slight hardware improvement, but will probably, if Apple sticks to pattern, come in lower priced here, it's to get all the other people, to get another 10 million, another 20 million, another 30 million people onto the Apple Watch platform, because that's their huge opportunity. There's, you know, however many Apple Watches you think are sold is in the tens of millions. And getting those people to upgrade is a very small market. But getting the rest of the hundreds of millions of iPhone customers to buy their first Apple Watch is the huge opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. WatchOS 3, it's trite to say, but it really does make it feel like a new watch. It is so much faster, so much more coherent, so much more focused. Exactly on what Andy said, it's focused on health. There's no more sort of people hub. It's very fast to launch your most recent applications or your favorite applications. It's really good with notifications. It's really good with Apple Pay. It'll do cool things like unlocking your Mac, which doesn't sound like much, but that's a whiz bang demo. And when you have a whiz bang demo, you show your friends and they get all excited. And then they want it because it makes it aspirational. And if they can just hit that tightly focused note when they debut the new hardware and then come in with the message of, if you want to get the original Apple Watch, it's now so such and such cheaper, and we think, you know, it's going to encourage millions more people to get them, then I think they start to build that product significantly.
Still bumps me out that you have to own a luxury phone in order to get the Apple Watch that works with it. I mean, I believe that Apple is sincere when they talk about all the benefits that the company can provide to people by creating this wonderful health platform. I think that I really wish they had made it like the iPhone as opposed to like an iPhone accessory, where we're going to make a $150 price competitive thing that will work with anything that's got Bluetooth LE working on it. Because we want to sell this to everybody from a business point of view. We want to sell to absolutely everybody who's got $150 to $200 in their pocket. But also that we think that this is one of the most important things, initiatives that we've got going for the next 5 to 10 years. And what good is changing the world if you're only changing that percentage of the world that happens to own our products?
The iTunes on Windows argument. Well, I mean, because like originally the iPod was only for the Mac, and you know, it wasn't accessible to everybody. Right. But then they convinced Steve to make iTunes for Windows, and suddenly everybody could use an iPod. And right now, the Apple Watch is only for people who own iOS devices, only people who own iPhones. In fact, it doesn't even work with an iPad. And the argument is, if you made it accessible to Android, then there's so many more people who could buy it, like with the iPod. I don't know how, you know, Apple's not traditionally great at cross-platform stuff, so it might be a horrible Android experience. You never know. But that's that classic debate about whether you keep it really tightly focused and make a really great integrated product, or you try to serve the vast majority of people.
I wonder if Apple had that conversation today about iTunes. Remember, Steve Jobs adamantly fought putting it
on. He said no, and they said, we're doing it anyway. And he said, F you guys, if it fails, it's your ass. And then they did it anyway.
And I wonder if that conversation were held today, if that would even come up. Or would they just say, you know what, this is back to what I was talking about earlier, where I feel like Apple's kind of at a fork in the road where it's saying, bye-bye, everybody else. We're going our way.
Well, I mean, Beats is on Android, and that's because they need volume. Yeah. Like, it depends on your business model. Like, you need volume
Apple
in order
Music
to be successful.
Apple Music is on Android. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. So they have done that, but they haven't done an Apple Watch Android mashup.
But there is a difference. I think that Apple has to do two things with music. They have to be completely competitive. They also have to bury any competitor that is weak. And they're not going to kill Spotify if Spotify is the service that is the only service you can get that's really wonderful and multi-platform for the sort of stuff that Spotify does. If Apple can say that we have integrated everything that Spotify does, we will support every platform that Spotify has as well. There are a lot of executives who work there that might be selling their second boat right now and wondering and already moving their stuff out of their first boat. They're not in huge trouble, but they can see a future in which they don't have a future.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a halo product. You get your Apple Watch, you run it with your Android phone, and you realize, wow, it'd be so much better if I had it with an iPhone. Then your next phone is an iPhone. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to look at how that works.
That's true, right? If you really loved your Apple Watch, you might then say, buy an iPhone.
I mean, that was the thing where, like, you get your iPhone, you like it so much, maybe you get a Mac. You know, so it is a business model.
In some ways, when we talk about Apple kind of veering off there, I think Apple's built-in community or ecosystem is so large that I don't know if they have to pay attention to them. You know, like, I don't think they have to really look out. You know, they can definitely make products that just all work with each other really well, and they're easy to set up, and I don't have to think about it. And some of it has to do with just resources. I mean, if you've got a market that's going to be that is much, much larger than the number of Apple Watches that you're going to sell. I mean, the market that Apple has within its own ecosystem is probably what, 30 to 100 times bigger than what they've already sold into already. So they've plenty of work to do in their own ecosystem, which is different than the iPod, because the iPod was selling into a very competitive market where they had a very small position. But here they have a lot of their own people to sell into. Why would they work on the other side of it right now?
You know, Alex has talked about this before too, but like you make the Apple Watch, and the Apple Watch, by some estimates, was late according to internal deadlines. They wanted to ship it earlier. Many would argue it still wasn't finished, and they didn't get really good with it until maybe this year. To add Android on top of that, it would have been a phenomenal, like a huge, huge drain on resources. They have to support all the different devices. It's like making a Mac app versus a Windows app, where you get all the Cocoa APIs just bundled in, and you have to make it support all these different configurations of hardware that you're not certain about, and it becomes a monumental task.
It's when we were building software, we had on the Mac, we would build like one version of or two versions of it for a couple of different operating systems. On the PC, the software we built, there was like literally 27 builds that we had to kind of support to make sure that it was going to work across chipsets and graphics cards and everything else. And so it's not trivial to go out to an outside and that was as a third party developer. For Apple, I don't think they have a strong reason to do it.
Let's take a quick break. There's a Wall Street Journal article that kind of brings back what we were talking about last week. Replacing Steve Jobs, how Apple CEO Tim Cook has fared 5 years later. What are you laughing at?
So much money.
I'm not laughing. I'm weeping. And I'm sure that at some point,
hey,
like,
you know what? They have a newspaper. They got to fill that newspaper every single day.
I'm just saying that. There are very few reasons why I would feel a lot of pity for a CEO multimillionaire like Tim Cook. One of them is like, can I go 8 days without something written about me that doesn't involve replacing CEO Steve Jobs with a, yeah, well, you know what? I'm buying eggs. All right. I'm looking at see which ones. I don't care how Steve Jobs would be in the same Whole Foods buying eggs. I wanted to make a cake.
To be fair,
not being compared to how Steve Jobs would be buying eggs.
It is the 5th anniversary of the succession. We'll see this again in, you know, 5 more years, whatever. But I mean, you kind of, this is when you would take a step back and assess, maybe. Yeah. No. No. All right.
I just feel like if anything else, it's 5. I would support that argument if, as a nation, as a worldwide celestial being, we all joined hands and said, we all get to spend the next 36 hours talking about the 5th anniversary of Steve Jobs passing and the jobs that Tim Cook has done in return for this 36-hour orgasm of once again doubting what Tim Cook will be doing. We never get to talk about this ever again, and we assume that Tim Cook gets to do whatever job he wants to do in the best interest of Apple and its customers.
Well, you know, amen. What I'm going to do? I'm going to close this tab, and we are not going to talk about that story.
Take that, Wall Street Journal.
Take that, WSJ. Oh,
I think we should have a lot of, you know, asking each president how it is not to be Abraham Lincoln. I mean,
Oh, that's a tough standard. You're right.
Wall Street Journal just stick to reviewing phones underwater.
It's like you got – if I were one of those people who are invited to, like, have 5 minutes on YouTube interviewing the president, I'm not sure I'd ask, what's it like to be the first black president?
Oh.
It's like – We're done. I mean,
yeah. Or as Zach Galifianakis said, what's it like to be the last black president? Ow. Here's Homer Simpson's the Simpsons kind of take on this. Edison in the horse race of inventions, kind of leading Homer. Okay. Anyway, thank you to the chat room for that graphical illustration of Andy's point.
No matter how hard you try to write an opera, you will not write an opera earlier in your life than Mozart wrote an opera.
Yeah. Nope, that's true. Thank you, Roland.
You ruined it for everyone.
Let's take a break. Our show today brought to you by My Mattress. Oh, a good night's sleep is so important. And when you don't get a good night's sleep, you underscore that statement. You realize. And I know much of our staff has worked so hard to put up our new studio to get it working, at least get it limping along so we could do some shows. I thank them, and I offer each and every one of them their very own Casper mattress. We don't have anywhere in the studio to put it, but we'll find a storage locker for you and your Caspers. The Casper mattress, it's an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. And they are revolutionizing the industry by eliminating resellers, eliminating stores, and bringing you factory direct savings. Of course, the first thing people say is, but wait, how do I know if I like it or not? I want to lie on it first. And sure, I guess you could say that lying out in the store for 5 minutes in the bright daylight with a baleful gaze of the shop clerk staring you down, making sure you don't put your shoes in the mattress, that's probably a good way to test a mattress. But I got a better way. With Casper, you've got 100 nights in your home with the lights out and no shop clerk to see if you really like this mattress. They combine two technologies. I think you will like it. Springy latex foam and supportive memory foam. So you get an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. It did, in fact, win the 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award this year. So it is literally award-winning mattress, but I give it the Leo Laporte A Great Night's Sleep Award. An obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Long-lasting comfort and support. This summer, it's been great. You know, we had the hottest July in recorded history. You were glad if you had a Casper because it breathes. It gives you cool sleep, which is so important during these hot summer nights. You can easily buy it online. And as I said, it's risk-free because you have 100 nights. They offer free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to try it in the showroom. You could try it in your own home. The Casper mattress. It meets the Goldilocks standard of just right. It's not too hard, not too soft, just right. Made in the U.S., free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Renee, get a Casper mattress today. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. That's a lot less than buying it at a mattress store. And we're going to take an additional $50 off your mattress purchase, because you're listening, if you go to Casper, CASPER.com/MacBreak, and use the promo code MacBreak at checkout. $50 off your Casper, CASPER.com/MacBreak. Terms and conditions apply.
You get the pet bed, Leo.
They have a pet bed, don't they? I think Ozzy needs a Casper. Oh, I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah, at least two or three people ordered it from my
mom. We will. Yeah, and I've been getting tweets from people who've been ordering the pillows and all the other stuff. But
I got all of it. I got the pillows. I got the bed frame. I'm so happy.
It's nice that they deliver in Canada, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I'm really pleased that you have one that fits my racing car bed.
They do. They have a nice twin mattress.
And like, what's the Cali King? Is
that you know, that doesn't fit in the race car. Unless they make king-size race car beds. That would be pretty cool. I'd buy
Cadillac
that.
Cadillac race car.
Yeah, bed. I'd get that Formula One race car bed. actually, speaking of Canada, we were talking before the break, but we should mention the performance a couple of nights ago of the Tragically Hip. The Hip did their last concert appearance because Gordo is, I'm sad to say, dying of brain cancer, and they did. See, nobody in the States really knows who the Tragically Hip are. Would you tell us, Renee?
So I'm just going to look for it quickly, but there was this phenomenal tweet that tried to explain the Tragically Hip to Americans. And it's just like, if all of your cultural icons if there was a band that was made out of all of your cultural icons and they had some of the most important music of your country and your generation, and they were doing their final show. And so here it is. For Americans wondering what's going on in Canada, imagine if Springsteen fronted REM, Dylan wrote the songs, and tonight is their last show ever.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. It was in Kingston, the home of the Hip, August 20th, broadcast worldwide without, and you mentioned this, and I didn't know it, but this is cool, regional restrictions by the CBC on the television, on the radio, and on the internet. So they estimated more than 11 million Canadians and others watched it, which, given that Canada is a country of 30 million, that's a pretty significant proportion of the population.
And they let it go. Yeah. Like there was encore after encore, and they kept it going. And the whole nation was weeping. You know, and our Justin Trudeau, it was awesome there.
He introduced them.
I mean, he's an interesting, because we've had stodgy prime ministers for a long time, and he's like out hiking topless and
he ain't stodgy.
He can explain quantum computing to you, and he loves Tragically Hip. So
their music is beautiful. Sean Carruthers up when I was doing the show in Toronto gave me the complete Tragically Hip. It's like 13 albums, And they really beautiful songwriting. I think, though, I think it probably didn't do well in the States because it's very Canadian. I mean, it's about Canadian topics. I don't know. I'll never understand why they didn't do well in the U.S.
Well, when the lead singer's name is Gord, that's
two of the bands named Gord,
and that's a perfectly good hockey name. I mean,
it's
like
a good name.
Exactly.
Hey, it's my middle name is Gordon, so I'm never going to complain. Gord Downey. They have not said, interestingly enough, they have not said it was their last tour, but it depends very much on Gord's health.
It was a big assumption, but I think it was a nice tribute, and I think it's showing that we're slowly chipping away at those regional boundaries that have constrained so much of our content for so long.
I think it's fascinating, though, that this is such a big event in Canada and really just kind of ignored around the
U.S. Yeah, well, I think that's actually something to say for Canada, because Canada spent a lot of money, as you know, on protecting content created in Canada.
Yes, that's right.
You know, I think that this is exactly why, is so that they would have things that were really Canadian and that didn't just get run over by their southern neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. The CTRC, their FCC, has very strict rules about Canadian content. For instance, when I went to do that show in Toronto, Call for Help, I was the only American allowed to work on it. Everybody else had to be from Canada for it to qualify.
We had unbundled cable for a long time in my province. Videotron would supply it, and you could get 20 channels for $20 originally, or 30 channels for $30, but you had to have a predominantly Canadian set of channels. But the way they got around that was MTV Canada, the Discovery
Tech
Canada.
Tech TV Canada, right?
Yep. So it had a small amount of local programming on an otherwise U.S. channel.
Yeah.
Well, of course, you know the hysterically funny story about SCTV, where it was an American show, but it was produced in Canada, and so they had a requirement where they had to have some form of Canadian content in every show. And so Rick Moranis said, "Well, what the hell you want us to do? Have like two hosers like sitting in front of a big map of Canada, just frying back bacon and drinking beer?"
Yes,
that would do fine. And so they would simply do the Bob and Doug McKenzie
brothers.
Oh. Which became the biggest thing that ever exported for it.
Yeah, really wonderful.
But to the point, though, this is one of the reasons why the internet is just so great, where it felt as though you Canadians had your family moment, you know, where you get to have your moment of this emotional moment as part of your own family. But then after the event was over, or slowly as it came to a close, it sort of leaked out to the entire world, and now we start to appreciate not only the music of this band, but why your country had such a fine connection to it. We were talking about before the show that I was only aware of them in the form of, wow, that's a really cool band name, for the years before that. But this got me listening to some of their music and buying a couple of their CDs, which are still shipping on the way, and looking for an illegal download of the show. The CBC, I think, posted something to say that we won't have this available online for streaming. We will not rebroadcast this ever. I'm sure, and I think there was some things that I'm sure the HIP will know what they want to do with this recording after it's done. But this is just for us and just for one time airing only.
Yeah.
So I'm disappointed that I could only find a couple of the concert clips. But as soon as it's available to purchase legally, I'm definitely going to purchase it legally. And this is it. Clear. It basically spread the gospel of the Tragically HIP in a way that I don't think that even a successful world tour would ever have achieved.
It would be really cool, wouldn't it, if they suddenly broke through and broke out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but for the worst of reasons, of course.
Yeah. And kind of at the end of their tenure, but
yeah, I mean, I just loved on Reddit. It wasn't just like people posting illegal clips. It was people writing several paragraphs in a row of, here's, I was there at the concert. What the HIP meant to me, and here is what you don't understand is that they almost never do this many encores. And it really, again, it really is like a wake where not everybody coming up to the podium to deliver a solemn speech, but just there's a drink in their hand and you've got a drink in yours, and they're telling you something about why this relative that you never met was just so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As long as we're talking about the Commonwealth, there's a little bit of a to-do in Australia going on right now. A number of Canadian banks are banding together: Westpac, Commonwealth Bank, National Australia Bank, Bendigo and Adelaide Bank. seeking an exemption from competitive law so they can negotiate as one and launch a collective boycott of Apple Pay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just Apple Pay. They want to boycott Google Pay and Samsung Pay, too. Their stance is that the companies, because they own the platform and the payment system, have an unfair bargaining position, and that they don't want to be charged with anti-competitive practices by not negotiating with them. So they want protection under Australian law to boycott the negotiations until they can get what they believe is fairer terms. It's worth noting that they do enjoy sort of an oligopoly where there is only a few. It's like Canada. There's a few federally chartered banks. It's a very different scene than what you see in the United States when there's hundreds and hundreds of banks. And we had the same problem in Canada. We had no Apple Pay originally. Then American Express, which is its own bank, announced Apple Pay. And then all of a sudden, a few months ago, all five of the major Canadian banks and Interact, which is the universal platform for debit cards, announced support for it. And now it's just ubiquitous everywhere. And the negotiating position is that Apple takes a small charge from what's paid. And in some countries, that amount of money there is very different. So in the U.S., there was a little bit more money, and Apple's percentage wasn't that egregious to the providers. But in Australia or Canada, apparently there's less points that you have in between that spread. So it was more expensive for them to give Apple a cut of that money, or to give it to Google, right, or to give it to Samsung. So,
it is more, though, than just tap to pay. The problem, for as they see it, is that on the iPhone, only Apple Pay has access to NFC. On Android devices, I mean, this as a good example, this Note 7 has both Android Pay and Samsung's payment procedure. And other apps could access the NFC, so I could have a Commonwealth Bank app on here use Tap to Pay. But on an Apple phone, only Apple can do the NFC. And I think that is a big part of the reason they're upset about all of this.
That is true. There's no NFC API. I mean, we saw it took a year to get a Touch ID API. It took 5 years to get a Siri API. And there is no NFC API. But if you go back to what's actually best for the customer, it's probably not having a diversity of apps on your phone that may or may not be secure, may or may not be well written. Most of the banking apps here are abysmal. They're web views that, because the security procedures are so difficult to enact, they just have never updated them. And they are, like, you actually see low resolution web buttons as the interface, because all they did is wrap them in an app, and they're horrible. And I would never use them, and I would have to, I think. I don't think they would cooperate. So in a way, just having, whether it is Samsung Pay or Google Pay or Apple Pay, having all of that handled, it's sort of like I can go to iTunes and get a song. I don't have to worry about going to every single music vendor, having an account, and having an app that does all my music. I can just go to this big music button and do it. And I think it benefits customers to be able to just go to that payment button and do it. So it'd be nice to have both, but I think the world is going towards a more unified solution for this.
It's interesting that we didn't have this debate in the U.S. Because it is really anti-competitive, in the sense that Verizon had a payment system which has gone away. Samsung's payment system is struggling only because Apple is a closed...
law is at least secure pay. And so a lot of people got very, very nervous immediately about the security, because if it's provable that it's your fault, suddenly you're on the line.
Yeah, but I mean, if I were Verizon, I would be a little annoyed. It'd be like, well, gosh, we wanted to have a wallet, but we couldn't have a wallet on iPhone. And
we'll realize that there is such a thing as Android Pay. And so
on Apple.
You got the 800-pound gorilla, you got the 800-pound shark. Between the sea and the land, there is no place for anybody else to live.
The point being, you can make a third-party payment system on an Android device.
So there's even a payment system for dopes. Good point.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think that's anti-competitive. I don't know if that's better for consumers. I think consumers should be able to choose the payment system they want.
This is the best thing that Android provides Apple, which is that Apple does not have the majority of the market. So you would just say that this is
Apple could just say, hey, there is choice. Right.
There's choice. You can always get another. You can always get a different kind
you
of.
You cannot use
it. They're basically saying, you know, if Apple had 51 or 60 or 70% of the market, this would be impossible. Like, what they're doing right now would be absolutely impossible. But because they have, you know, if you look at the smartphone market, they have a shrinking, you know, margin of that, of the total market. I think it makes any kind of monopoly structure very difficult to argue. I mean, they own their own.
Well, remember, we mocked currency. The Walmart attempt to do a payment solution, but they didn't have access to NFC, so they had to do that goofy QR code solution.
I don't know if they knew what NFC was, Leo. I think they started planning
it. They couldn't use NFC on Apple phones, and that really made they had to use a less acceptable solution that was really inconvenient for consumers, and it killed it.
Well, they also had an aversion to using credit cards.
Yeah, I understand. There are other issues
Also, that the problem is that if they had full access to NFC, currency would not have been able to deliver to Walmart what Walmart wanted to get out of the system, which is absolute unfettered access to every transaction you're making, not only in every Walmart store, but in every participant in the currency cartel. So I don't think that that Apple or Google gets any sort of an assist in the death of currency. It was just a terrible, terrible system that was going to struggle, even if not for the fact that you have Android Pay and Apple Pay, two excellent contactless payment systems to compete with. So that's death by their own hand.
And I think it is scary for the banks, because if you don't participate in this process, you lose out on a lot of revenue. There's credit cards that I don't have on my Apple Pay, and as I use it more and more and more, I use those credit cards a lot less. And so that you have to participate in the United States, I think, pretty much as a bank, or you're going to be losing out on more and more of your ordering. But in addition to that, there you do see both Google and Apple stepping in between the credit card providers and the credit card users, and I think that there's a lot of opportunity there for them to make that gap a lot wider if they wanted to.
There's a big retailer in Australia called Coles, kind of the equivalent of Walmart, and they want to do their own payment system, and they're joining in with the banks. It's eventually the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has to decide by October which cartel is right.
Big retailers want to get rid of credit cards because they see the fees that they're paying.
What if
credit
they
card
just
companies,
wanted
so they
to
want
do
it.
A digital wallet? I mean, what if they just said, we want to provide some competition for Apple Pay because Apple Pay charges such a high price. We want to do a 1% solution, instead of what is it for Apple Pay charges?
It's not just that, though. They just like a lot of most car dealerships, they don't sell cars. They are actually finance companies that use cars as ways of getting people into a finance contract. And a lot of these larger chains, they would love for you to use their own their own form of currency so that they can lock you into their own financial system and perhaps be able to they'd have to be subject to some regulation, but they'd have a lot of freedom to abuse these systems. I'm really concerned about what would happen if any court were to rule that if there's any part of a phone or a popular piece of hardware, a third entity should have the right to access any component on that hardware for any purpose that they see fit. And I don't think there's an equivalency between NFC and this, but in the broader sense, it's the idea of what happens if someone says, I'm tired of using Apple's APIs. I want to be able to write things directly to the screen. And why is Apple controlling the only access to pixels on the screen? Because they build your own damn phone.
I think that's kind of a straw man argument. We're just saying open the NFC.
I think that would be a positive thing for Apple to open NFC. There are a lot of cool things that I'm doing with my Android phone because I can create my own solutions. I'm only mentioning this because this really occurred to me this morning. I'm having a problem where I'm still getting like my normal 6 to 8 hours of sleep a day, but I don't know what spice I ate in any takeout food that I had in the last 2 weeks. But for some reason, I am not able to fall asleep before like 6 or 7 in the morning. And then I sleep until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, exactly. It's like my brain's preparing me to live in Australia or something. It's terrible. And so I had this idea of I'm going to write a new alarm clock app that requires I'm going to build like an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi thing, an NFC reader in another room making a loud noise where I physically have to pick up my phone, walk into that room, and touch my phone to this device in order to turn it off. And that's the only way to turn it off. And that's a silly thing, even though I think it's cool. They intend to show it off on the Shark Tank this season on ABC. Watch for me. But there are a lot of little things like that. I think that it's important to allow the third parties to find the cool in your device. And NFC... just the ability to say, I'm going to make things happen just by proximity, I'm going to tap this to hear and it works.
My guess is that it's similar to Touch ID. So Touch ID took a year to make an API for, because my understanding is originally they couldn't secure the token. So Touch ID would release a yes-no token, but the app could pretend it got any token it wanted, because it would just get the token, okay, I got it, we'll just say yes. And so it took them a year, and they ended up integrating it into iCloud Keychain. So now that token goes to iCloud, and iCloud doesn't, you never know what it is. iCloud just understands it and releases you the credentials or doesn't release credentials, and that's absolutely secure. And it could be with Apple's NFC that they are trying to make sure that when they do make that API, that there's no ability to scan for it as you walk. Because right now, they're only turning it on right away when you do the transaction. They're turning it off again. So it makes it much harder to start passively pulling stuff off of. Like, some people worry about NFC cards or RFID and passports. So it makes it very hard to intercept those things. You've got to be super close and super timely. But if it could be on at any particular point in time, that's much harder to secure. So my guess is we won't see the NFC API until they make it rock solid and they know that if it's turned on for any reason, no one's trying to pull your credit card data. No one's trying to access anything on your phone. It's bulletproof, and these are the things you can do with it.
That is a little self-serving because, I just have to point out, you and I and everybody else is paying for, this charge is passed along by the merchants and the retailers to us. And if Apple has an anti-competitive position and can charge whatever it wants as their VIG for providing the transaction and puts everything else out of business, it could go up and up and up, and we just comes out of our pocket. So
I'm not sure that's international. So in Canada, at least, my understanding is that the retailer is responsible for the credit card charges. The user is the customer is responsible for debit card.
I understand,
charges.
But retailers, look, at any cost retailers have in their operation ends up being passed on to you.
Well, some of them refuse to take credit cards because they want you to use your debit card because you pay the extra percentage.
Some of them here in the States will give you a price break if you don't use a credit card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I understand. But I'm just saying that ultimately this is something consumers should be concerned about because any competitive behavior like this costs us money.
Or we're paying for convenience. I mean, I can pay with my watch now and it may cost me a percentage more, but I would probably pay that anyway if there was a subscription fee for my watch. Yeah. The ability to go in.
I am not a fan of an Apple monopoly in this respect.
Okay, no, that's fine. I'll only say that Renee is absolutely right. I mean, it's absolutely correct to ding Apple or at least be concerned when Apple has a technology that they're not letting third parties have access to. But they have established a pretty reliable track record of making something that is only under control of Apple for the first year, 2 years, maybe even 3 years. But then eventually they give access to everybody else. I mean, for heaven's sakes, how long do we have to wait for cut, copy, and paste on our phones, for God's sake? But the thing is, with other companies, I would be a lot more concerned about how the reason why they're not allowing third-party apps or the reason why they're not allowing NFC is because they're trying to be anti-competitive. They're trying to kill other industries. With Apple, I will say that it's annoying that I can't do cool NFC stuff on my phone yet, but I at least trust Apple based on experience that when they feel as though they can create a system that will allow third parties to access NFC without compromising what Apple believes, right or wrong, to be the security of the device, they're going to let that happen.
Well, I also think that the extra margin that Apple makes on its phone is far greater than all of the Starbucks coffees I'm going to buy between now and when I get rid of the phone.
Maybe. Not sure I'd say that. Remember, Apple's a services company now. And there's a lot of that. There's money to be made in those crumbs that fall off your financial.
No, and they're also incredibly headline sensitive.
Well, but this is an interesting point because until this story, I don't even think I'd considered the fact that this is kind of monopolistic behavior on Apple's
part. Well, last year there were headline after headline about how Apple Pay was causing fraud when it absolutely wasn't. It was completely immune from fraud. It was the bank not canceling.
Yeah, that was a BS. Those were BS
stories.
Totally.
And we saw Touch ID came out and suddenly people are trying to break it. I mean, like, other companies have stored fingerprints in world readable directories and you barely see a headline. But anything Apple does is, because they are so popular, that is the equal and opposite effect of it. And if there is a single breach to NFC, you would see it everywhere. I think that's why the bug bounty, Apple's new bug bounty program, one of the highest amounts you can get is if you can pull any information at all off that secure element in the NFC.
Well, I think Apple Health also has a reason to not want to gouge people over, you know, the per transaction, because I think they're always making money on the entire ecosystem. You know, so it's not necessarily, you know, gouging on one area or the other wouldn't necessarily could reduce the usage, you know, of the ecosystem. And so I don't think that theoretically, absolutely they could do that. But are they going to go much probably any higher than what they're doing now? I mean, practical terms, probably not.
We can also point out the fact that ATM networks are not necessarily proprietary. Banks are operating with freedom and individuality. That does not, that has not stopped every single bank from charging a crazy, stupid amount of money for a transaction fee every time that you take money out of an ATM. Sometimes when you're even using an ATM on your own network. So it's not an easy question.
And they, I mean, if I was Apple, I would be selling this as a convenience. Like, yes, you're paying me a percentage, but look how much faster your transactions are happening at the cash register because people aren't putting in a chip and a PIN or having to do a sign. And it's secure. And if you do have a breach, they're only getting one-time tokens. They're not getting numbers. So this is the cost of what you're – this is the value that we're giving you with Apple.
Right. Well, and I have to admit that I really want to see it, you know, everywhere, like on whether I'm doing web purchases, what I'm doing, you know, like all
come
these
to
other
Canada,
things.
Alex.
Because it's not I get frustrated, but I have found myself, you know, choosing one store, like especially drugstores, you know, over each other because one's got Apple Pay and the other one, you know, doesn't.
Yeah. We started off talking about really super advanced features of brand new phones and things that only a company that operates at the scale of Apple can do compared to smaller companies. But really, the things that really get right to the heart of a consumer are simple convenience, like I just place my phone on top of or bring it near to a POS terminal and the transaction happens. I don't have to fumble with my wallet. I don't have to swipe something through. I don't have to cover up the keypad because I need to type in a PIN or something like that. I just tap it. I wait for it to go bling and it's done. This morning, I went to my New England regional market, not the really tiny mom and pop market of which there are only four that I also shop at. Finally upgraded their self-serve terminals so that they actually take Android Pay and Apple Pay. And just the ability to, I don't have to worry. I don't have to think about it. If I just drop my phone on here, not only is it physically convenient, but I have no concern about anything being intercepted during this transaction. And like Alex says, this will help me to want to spend more money at this place rather than a place where I don't know if it's running Windows XP without any service pack somewhere in the manager's office and skimming credit card numbers.
Well, if you look at like online sales, I'm generally, there's only a handful of places that I like to put my credit card anymore. You know, like it's not, you know, like I got scammed once. So what happened, you know, from an online sale. And so now I'm always like, well, if I don't, you know, I will look at Amazon and B&H first for most of my purchases. Yeah. And then I'm more likely to, you know, buy something from someone if they've got the Amazon Pay that's going to give me like a little, you know, controlled window and I'm not going to, you know, that type of thing. And I think that, you know, I'd love to have that be something that was ubiquitous with something like Apple Pay. And I think that really there we think in these esoteric areas that what we want, but I think that things being mildly more more convenient is oftentimes enough.
Apple acquired a small company called Glimpse. It's a health data startup that allows you to share your health data and control who it's shared with from different platforms. In other words, combining information from labs and hospitals and pharmacies into a single health report. Apple has confirmed that they acquired Glimpse, but not said what they're going to do with it. But it's, by the way, Glimpse with two I's, G-L-I-I-M-P-S.
Glimpse.
Apple from time to time acquires smaller companies.
Yes, that's their statement. Makes sense, well, though. This would be a great thing for HealthKit.
If we look at how this is combined with some of the security stuff that they showed at WWDC, I think that they fit hand in hand of truly making sure that you can get anonymized data that is being shared for other reasons that isn't ever going to come back to you. I mean, and that's, they spend a lot of time talking about that. And I think one of the reasons they would do that is for health reasons specifically of, I want to go ahead and share this all so that researchers can find out how people live and how to make their life better and more healthy. But I don't necessarily want that to show up on my, you know, insurance record.
Let's take a break and you guys get your picks ready because our picks of the week coming up in just a moment. But first I want to pick texture. I love magazines. I find magazines often have some of the best journalism going because it's kind of slow journalism. You know, they take the time to write these stories. Often it's just a monthly magazine. There's always something I want to read. There's probably 20 magazines that every month there's something in there I want to read, whether it's Rolling Stone or The New Yorker or Vanity Fair, GQ. I like to take the quizzes on Cosmo. I actually like to look at the Billboard charts and see what's up in the ad industry with Ad Age. So, and for cooking, you know, I'm always looking for new recipes. Bon Appetit. Great stuff. Lots of cooking magazines. All of these things are on my iPhone because I have a subscription to Texture. Texture is like Netflix for magazines. All the magazines you want, hundreds of the best magazines for one flat monthly rate. Very affordable, too. So you don't have to subscribe to those magazines. You don't have to buy the newsstand issue for just one article. You save money. You save coffee table clutter. I guess this week you'd probably be wanting to read Sports Illustrated about the Olympics and our top athletes. Well, there you go. You see, maybe you don't want to subscribe year-round, but this is one you want to read. It's in there because you get them all. You can read the magazines offline, too. Download them and you read them on a plane or on the beach where there's no internet access. It's easy to remain curious about the world with top stories and new and noteworthy sections, so you don't even have to know about the magazines to find subject matter you want from Macworld and National Geographic and PC Magazine and Popular Photography and Popular Science, Sound and Vision. Texture is awesome. And because you can access your account on 5 devices, you can have it on your iPhone and your iPad, and your wife can have it on her iPhone and her iPad. And there's even room for one more. Give it to Grandma. Texture.com/Twit. No more stacks of National Geographic in the basement, Grandma. Sorry. I've got them all on my iPad. You also get bonus content you can't do in a print magazine like videos. Over 200 of the world's best magazines, one low price. It's a great deal, and you can try it free right now. I encourage you to do it. You're going to get hooked. Texture, TEXTURE.com/Twit. Sometimes I feel guilty about the stack of magazines piling up next to my bed. Texture eliminated it all. I can read it all on my iPad. Texture.com/twit. Give it a try free right now. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with Renee Ritchie all the way over there. Hi, Renee.
Hi, so I have two for you, Leo, today. So yay. One of them I'll just mention quickly is a few weeks ago, Ivan Kristic, who is head of security at Apple, gave a talk at Black Hat. And it was semi-historic because Apple's never done that sort of talk before at Black Hat. And it was the fundamentals. They announced the bug bounty, but he also did a deep dive into the fundamentals of iOS security. A really great talk, and it's available on YouTube now. So if you haven't seen it, if you missed it, if you weren't at Black Hat, and this might be a better fit for Steve Gibson and security now, but I just wanted to let everybody know that if you're interested in how Apple is looking at privacy and looking at security and how they want to keep your information on your device and keep it safe, it's a phenomenal
I would love talk. This is great. Kudos to Apple. They should do more of this high, deep dive stuff, because there are people like us who want to know this stuff. And that's great. Reach out and tell people what you're up to. I love that.
And he's the guy who did Bitfrost. He's the guy who did sandboxing. He's the guy who did Enterprise, the rootless stuff. So he's phenomenally clever about these things, and it's great that they put him up on stage.
And now, by the way, he explains why some components in iOS 10 are not encrypted.
Yes.
Because who cares if the boot logo is encrypted, okay?
Yeah, no, and he's really, really forthright. He's a really, really smart guy.
Even if you disagree or whatever, the fact that they're out there explaining it, saying, we're thinking about it, here's our thinking, fantastic.
I'm so hate smart. Like, if you're going to hate them, hate them for legitimate reasons.
Yeah, right.
That's the best possible.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So my other thing is I've been traveling a lot, and there's very little that hits my battery harder than roaming, because just different towers are tuned to different networks. And if I have a Rogers phone on AT&T, or if you have an AT&T phone on Rogers, wherever you go, typically when you're roaming, your battery gets hit harder. The things that use up battery are radiation-based. The screen is on. The screen is bright. The radio is ramping up trying to keep a connection. So I travel with battery packs usually. And yeah, because there are things like Snapchat now, and there are things like Facebook, and there's things like Pokemon Go, the average power consumption on our devices has never been higher. When Apple originally said 10 hours of battery life and internet on Wi-Fi usage, they meant like checking your mail, checking a few web pages. They didn't mean looking at all this video, which is constantly like Snapchat stories, a huge amount of data. I've had to up my data plan almost double since I started using Snapchat. Facebook, notorious for staying alive in the background. Pokemon Go, you have the screen on all the time and the GPS firing because you're always out catching Pokemon. So what I did was I broke down and I bought yet another battery case. And this one I got, I have to admit, because it was rose gold, they had me in the colors. Scratch my surface and you will find more surface. This is just a huge...
And that surface will be rose gold.
Most importantly.
Until the space blue one is out. It'll absolutely be rose gold. And it, I mean, Amalfi did a great job because these things are increasingly, people are more fashion conscious about them, and they are integrated into our lifestyle.
Does it match pretty well?
It matches. So I'll hold it. I'll hold it up to the camera, but it matches pretty perfectly.
Because that's a hard thing to do. Because Apple's rose gold is really a unique shade.
Yeah, I'm turning it the wrong way. There we go. Yeah, but yeah,
that looks good.
It's really, really close.
Yeah.
And you put them together, and you're. And this is like, you don't have to get one this big. This is just silly. But if I'm at, I was stuck at an airport. My plane was 5 hours late, and airports are notoriously bad for radio reception, and the Wi-Fi is not always great either. And I would just, I would have not been with a phone for three of those hours if I hadn't had a massive battery case with me. So I just put it in my pocket. I connect the Lightning cable, and it will recharge two or three times. It says four or more times. I think 8X is the official labeling on it. But if you're using it and the screen is on and the radio is ramped up while you're charging, it's never going to be as much as it would in the lab. But it works for an iPad, works for an iPhone. It's USB, so you can plug in your Android phone. You can plug in your headset. I have these noise-canceling headphones that I'm wearing, the Bose ones that require charging. So I can just plug in anything, and it charges fairly quickly, and I'm just back on. And that's priceless to me when I'm traveling, the ability to stay connected.
I'll say it's a having a big, big honking battery. That's like going through life knowing that you are loved by God.
Yes,
because you feel as though there's very little that can really truly harm you. If I've got a big, huge Anker 22400 battery, and given that like my usual travel machine is an iPad, knowing that if I don't see if there's a hurricane and there is no power for 72 hours, I don't even have to like not binge watch Columbo on Netflix if it does conserve anything, because I've got at least two or three changes of battery here. It's like one of the simplest, however much you're spending on whatever piece of kit you're about to buy, round it up to the next 100 by buying battery packs, because again, it's, you've got the sword, you've got the shield, you are invincible.
Yeah, when I'm traveling, that's very pretty. At least one. You got.
I've had a MacBook I've connected to it as well, because like you and
yes, yes, out, yes, yes, yes. That was the first thing I tried when Apple sent me the MacBook for review. Like, oh please, please, please don't be the Apple of 2009 that would definitely have just put in something artificial to prevent it from charging from an external battery. And it's like, yes, you are. I'd get 23 hours of battery life just by having this big honking Anker battery.
You know, and that's one thing that really bugs me about HP made that MacBook clone, the Spectre, and it will only charge with an HP charger, even though it's a Type-C connector.
Yeah.
And that's just artificial. There's no reason not to work with other.
You're throwing away an advantage of USB-C. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you take only the disadvantage of having a foreign connector that the user doesn't have any copies of?
Makes me so angry. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm super happy about this.
Nice. Very good.
Me and my giant battery.
Tell us the name and price again.
It's 100. I think it's 150 US. I paid way more in Canada because Canada, but it's the Mophie, and it's the Power Station 8X. I think I went for the big one.
The big one.
And you can get your choice of colors.
Get the big one.
Yeah.
Alex Lindsay, pick of the week, sir.
So I went out and we're looking for the right headset to give to folks that are doing production, the right Bluetooth headset. I didn't want a cable. I want to be able to set your phone down and be able to walk around and do what you need to do while you're working and still be connected. And so, you know, I just bought a whole bunch of them and tested them. And the one that we like the best, now it's not the most fashion conscious one, but it is the one that was the most effective from a point of being loud and have good clarity, is this little guy here. Now, this is a pull it out. It's like it's a bit of a headset. This is a Blue Parrot VX.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Blue Parrot Blue Parrot 3 B50.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's the
B350 XT.
That's the headset truckers use. They love because it's so
there's
good.
A
noise.
Lot of reviews.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reviews. Yeah. They're like, this is great in
the
my
noise canceling is like, so good. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So great noise cancellation. A boom is kind of required for us because all we care about is that we can understand what you're saying when you say, you know, the speaker, you know, the person is not going to get on stage in time.
Right.
And so, so it's simple. It is a little bulky. You know, it's not like the tiny little whatever, but what we were looking for.
That's got a big battery though. That's why, right?
Lasts a long time. Yeah. It also is comfortable. It's not in your ear.
Right.
It also, the boom mic definitely makes it more, you know, makes your voice clearer and you can hear everything clearer because it's got a bigger, you know, it's got a bigger speaker.
So who cares if you look like a Time Life operator? Who cares?
You look like the Battlestar Galactica. So, it's amazing.
So what if you look like a mission control engineer during the Apollo era?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
It's Alex.
Why not look awesome? If you can't walk around with one of those Snoopy caps that they would use in the command and service module, that's for me. There's just that, and then there's 800 points below that, but that looks like it's at the top of the below that.
It's awesome.
Honestly, yeah, I would wear one of those.
Really
caps
want clarity. You know, if you're really all you're looking at is I don't want wires, but I do want clarity, both what I hear and what other people hear. Then, you know, because that's a big reason why I choose the headsets that I choose is actually the you know how they are on the phone. This is the best one we found for Bluetooth.
Blue Parrot, the B350 XT, the choice of truckers and Alex Lindsay everywhere.
Here we go, trucking.
Yeah, it's funny because I know about this from the radio show because we got a lot of truckers listening. And they all love that Blue Parrot there. They love that. Andy and I should mention, I was, you could use that wimpy little battery.
Okay.
You could use that wimpy little battery, but if you really care, you'd probably spend $500 on this. The powerhouse from Anker. Oh, it's a 400 watt hour, not milliamp hour, watt hour portable battery supply.
Fuel cell or nuclear, Leo? I wasn't sure.
You can charge your laptop 15 times with this puppy. Look at the guy in the hammock. He's got his phone.
Can I charge the robot that carries it behind me?
Yeah, it's a little big. It's a little bit big.
That typing you hear is me ordering. I'm like,
Look at that. Isn't that awesome? AC outlet.
That's hot.
12-volt. That's
pretty damn hot.
Car socket. 4 fast charging USB ports.
40 recharges on an iPhone. That's amazing.
40 iPhone recharges. pretty impressive.
This is definitely going
off. If you want to be the hit of any Pokemon party, you bring that to the party.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Put that down and... dollar refills.
Isn't that nice? Anker does good stuff. It is a little pricey at $500, but
I just want to point out that it can run your mini fridge for 7 hours.
Yeah.
Hey, what a deal.
Perfect.
400 watt hours, baby.
Perfect.
Andy Inako, your pick of the week.
Mine is so simple, but I like it so much. It's a little utility called PipTube, PipTube for iOS. All it does is it will take you copy a YouTube link. And then you go into the Today tab where PipTube lives and you tap a button inside Today and it will play that YouTube video using iOS's built-in video player, which means that you can finally watch YouTube using the picture-in-picture functionality of iOS 9. Given that I spend so much, I would say that I at least spend as much time watching TV shows on YouTube, and I'm talking about the really great original content that gets produced on YouTube. There was a new xrobots.co.uk video that I watched in its entirety immediately before running into the studio to be here at 2 for Mac Break. I watched so much stuff on YouTube that it just annoys me that I can't use the YouTube app to use picture in picture. The most picture in picture necessary feature for YouTube. I don't know why Google does slide. YouTube does slide over. Does everything except for the thing that I really really want. So it annoys me that you need something as bonehead stupid as see this link, open it in, create a container for it using the built-in video player, and let me have picture in picture. I was happy to give Jesse Coron. I'm not pronouncing his name correctly. Coronen, Kuronen, $2 for this because it's like, why does the YouTube app not do this?
Nice. What is it? Pip? You pip?
PipTube. PipTube. And I swear to God, after I found this, I was looking for like video players that did this. After I found this, I'm like, I must be stupid. There must be an update planned to the YouTube app, or there must be another app that's much more complicated than this. Because I was afraid that there's going to be like ads in this, or it was going to be one of those like Russian/Chinese developer names that makes you suspect what's happening to your web traffic or whatever. But nope, it works great. It's released under the "Give me money and I will give you an app" plan, which I favor very much.
Nice.
And like I said, right, really, I highly recommend it for people who watch a lot of YouTube.
Okay. Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com, Alex Lindsay, PixelCore.com. Once again, Fabu, you guys are great. Always a pleasure, and welcome to the new Twit East Side Studios. Tess, we call her.
Looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. We'll see you again next week on this same Bat channel at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 1800 UTC, Tuesdays. And maybe, let's see, I would guess that's about 2 weeks, the week after that, right? That'll
so close.
Be Renee Ritchie in studio because he should be in San Francisco around September 7th. He should be.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
He should just be in town. You never know.
Either working exceptionally hard or just every time I've bought pre-bought flights and hotels, like, okay, I'm either going to be super busy these next 4 days or I'm going to have lots of time to visit all of my friends in San Francisco.
Leo, do you need any sweeping done around the studio?
What's your prediction, though? It probably won't be at Moscone or the Yerba Buena Center, right? It'll probably be...
My guess is that the last three events were at Bill Graham, and it suited them really well for the Apple TV demos and then for the getting a bunch of people in there for WWDC. So I think they've outgrown Yerba, and Camp and AC2 isn't ready yet. So it feels like Billy Graham is their go-to for a while.
I wonder, let's just go check this schedule for the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium and see if there's anything going on September 7th. You know, like
it could be the last major
I think it will be,
release
right?
that they do outside of the...
Yeah. What are the chances that
there could be a small Mac, iPad, or something event in October? But that would be the last giant one.
Wouldn't it be wild if you got an invitation and it said, "Join us on the new Apple campus"?
I don't think it's ready.
Yeah.
Wear your rubbers. It's a little muddy.
We're flying in on a drone.
as I'm sure, Leo, you have absolutely no familiarity with, there's a difference between having the structure all built and having it actually serve wire and tiling and all the little things that make it habitable actually working there. That's like 80% of the project, and so I don't think they're quite finished.
I mean, like, you never know.
I was really hoping that they would debut it in September, but oh well.
The Flint Center was 2 years ago. I just think that they saved that for really epic things. So
I'm just saying there doesn't look
like
there's anything going on at the Bill Graham Civic until September 21st. That's when Die Antwoord comes into town.
Great South African band, Die
Antwoord. Yeah, they're your people, aren't they? A South African rap duo. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, those are the guys from the movie. From...
Plan 9 from Outer Space, District 51.
No, that's from the robot, Chappie.
Chappie. Oh, yeah. Oh, they were great in Chappie.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were actually a thing.
Ninja and Yolandi and Beat Annihilator DJ High Tech will be in town.
Beat Annihilator.
But that's not till the 21st, so there could be an event in there for Apple anytime in the next 3 weeks.
It'll be so much easier when you can just assume it's going to be at Apple campus, too.
Yeah.
Like right now, it's still all the leaves.
Yeah. I will say that I'm sorry to see everything move to the Apple campus because it's such a pain in the butt to get there from San Francisco. And the alternative is to basically book your hotel in Cupertino, which is lovely if you want to visit the Apple store, a couple of really great burrito places. But San Francisco,
there's a lot
spending,
of, I will say,
if you're spending a lot of money for a week in the area, maybe you'll have more fun. And the nightlife in San Francisco.
Wait a minute. There's the Juniper Hotel Cupertino. It's part of the Hilton Curio collection.
It's right across the street from Bitter and Sweet. So you'll get really good
$149 a night, right off Highway 280.
And that's for a weekday?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not normally that price.
You get into those world in the weekdays in the South Bay. It's incredible. Like Motel 6 will be like $300 a night.
Yeah.
You get to the weekends because everyone's all coming in.
Yeah, it's business hotels. You know,
So then you get to the weekend and it's like $100 a night. You know, and so it's completely inverted from what we normally see.
Yeah.
I've never seen Juniper under $400 when I've needed to go there.
Wow.
Talk about awkward, though. Like, I once got an Airbnb, and it turned out to be Tim's house. It was like the small talk we had to make for 3 days
was
absolutely
empty
deadly.
For the exercise bike. I mean, it was...
Every time I came in there with my Android phone and said, "Do you have an outlet where I can plug this in?" Oh, boy. That was it was like I was drawing my underwear in his microwave. It was.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for joining us on Mac Break Weekly. We'll see you right back here next week. Don't forget, you can get on-demand audio and video on our website, twit.tv/MBW, and also wherever you subscribe to podcasts. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. But now I'm afraid it's time to get back to work because break time is... Bye-bye.